Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
July 20th. I feel very unsanitary. I actually got a little zit between my boobs, which kind of freaks me out. Please, God, say this is not a turning point for my perfect chest complexion.
Most kids don't know how good they have it. But then there's that rare breed, like Caitlin Tortorisi, that knew exactly how good their lives were. And you'd think that would make them all the more appreciative, maybe even nicer.
The good thing about camp is that it's made me grateful as hell that I'm a rich, relatively good-looking bitch.
If you thought that, you'd be wrong.
I'll probably never grow bald, or even get gray hair until I'm 75. I'll probably be the hottest MILF at every reunion I have.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. And today, in honor of the 13th anniversary of Mean Girls, a film that reveled in the devious quest for popularity, we're looking at all the not-so-nice ways we acted as tyrannical kids, from the power struggles to the pettiness.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
And what better way to start off our episode about Mean Girls than by talking to one of the few people who's dealt with them on the big screen?
Hi, my name is Daniel Franzese.
Who you may remember as Damien.
See, this is the color I want.
This is Damien. He's almost too gay to function.
It turns out he wasn't just surrounded by Mean Girls on the big screen, but in real life too.
Growing up, especially as a young closeted queer boy, I had a lot of different bullies and bullying type situations. But my first bully was a girl. And her name was Melissa Shore.
Yep, Danny encountered his mean girl when he was just 8 years old.
I had had people be mean or nasty to me before, but not somebody who tormented my life every single day when I came to school. People said different things here or there, called me chubby or whatever, but she just went in on me. You know, one day I had this specific shirt, that had a plastic bubble type eyeball that came out of it. I got it at Toys R Us around Halloween time, and it said eyes on you. And I thought it was cool, but I guess having a little belly, it made me have a second belly. And, you know, people, like kids would punch me in the eye and the belly and be like, black eye, you know, and be punching me in the stomach. And she just relentlessly made fun of me for that. You know, one time she called me chunky cheese. She just couldn't keep her mouth shut. If she had a good joke, she had to say it. She just tortured me for every little thing. Like, it didn't matter what I did. She was my foil. I just couldn't get away from her.
And then, one day during gym class, things between Danny and Melissa came to a head.
When we had to do the mile run, I thought that the mile was a figure of speech. And I was like, to run a mile, we'd be in the next city. It didn't make any sense to me. And that day, I stood there in the hot field, and I was like, freaking out that I was going to have to run a mile. I'm like, how do I get out of this? And I had to think quick. And I was like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to fall down and I'm going to pretend that I hurt my knee on a rock. I faked the fall. I landed on a real rock and I was like, oh, you know, holding my knee. Like, and the PE teacher was like, okay, you could just, you know, take a break or whatever. And right at that moment, I was like, I got out of it, you know? And I really thought I was going to, like, I had my heart in my throat pounding. And Melissa goes, ha ha, Danny Fat Franzese fell on purpose so he wouldn't have to finish the mile run. That's when my face turned red and my ears got hot. And I, after all of the weeks of abuse, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I grabbed her by her new acid wash denim jacket. And I swung her around as hard as I could and threw her into the mud. And she fell face flat into the mud and got completely covered head to toe in mud. Then they brought us both to the principal's office, and they called both of our moms.
And when Danny's mom showed up at the principal's office, sure, she managed to resolve the situation, but in a way that left him even more humiliated.
My mom is very quick-witted, and she's street smart, and in order to protect me, she said, you know, Daniel comes to me every day, and he just says, Mom, Melissa's so mean to me, but she's just so pretty. And I went, what? Like, I couldn't believe that my mother was betraying me. Like, I looked at her in the face like, how could you? And my arms folded and my head looked against the wall and I refused to be present for the rest of this meeting. And my mom was trying to play it off like I had a crush on her. I still remember the smug look on Melissa's face when she looked up to her mom's face and they were just so gleeful and like happy that I thought she was pretty or something. My mom was trying to be chill about it. She was trying to like finesse the whole thing, the situation, because I could get in trouble for throwing a girl into the mud. But she was trying to make like, he likes her. It's just kid. It boys will be boys. And I was like, not this boy and not that girl.
Years went by, but Daniel never forgot the mean girl from elementary school. And just like the movie, he was determined to make sure Melissa would eventually get her comeuppance.
We were put in the same class in seventh grade. Very first day of our I think it was social studies class. Our teacher wasn't in the room yet. And so the students were acting up a little bit. And this kid, Steve Sherman, took her purse and started running around the room. And she kind of was having too much fun with it. Like she had a crush on him or something. Like, give it back. Like, all flirty. And I just couldn't take it. I'm like, I'm going to have to deal with a whole year of this, you know? And they were running around the desks chasing each other. And I just took my moment. I just stuck my foot out ever so slightly and tripped her, and she flew about five desks forward and landed on her face, and everybody laughed at her, and it felt glorious. Then she got up and stormed towards me and hit me in the back of the head with her purse, and it really hurt. Her hitting me in the back of the head with the purse didn't hurt as much as watching her fall felt good.
While Daniel Franzese was staring down his Regina George,
that is the ugliest effing skirt I've ever seen.
Thousands of miles away, Angela Weeks was an enterprising teenager who wanted nothing more than to be the Regina George of her school.
I grew up in a small town called Ipswich in the county of Suffolk in England. The most important thing to me in eighth grade was being popular and having power.
And Angela was willing to do whatever it took to become popular, even if that meant getting a bad reputation.
I wanted to be tough like Rizzo from Greece and find my own group of pink ladies. And I did. But being part of a posse wasn't enough. I realized I needed to attend parties. The more parties we threw, the wilder we got. And sadly, the bigger my ego seemed to get. February 25th, I had a bottle of cider for Susan's party. Got pissed. That's drunk to you Americans in the audience. And pulled up my top and said, do you like my new bra? Pulled up my skirt and said, do you like my new knickers? I Frenchied Jason and went to the toilet in front of Steve W. Peter R. was up my top and down my knickers. Steve W. was up my top. I was playing with their dicks. This is eighth grade. Just so you know. Natalie got off with Peter L and Jack fingered her seven times. Lucy got a hickey off Peter L. Lenny and Lisa were going out together. Chelsea got off with everyone. Except for Peter, Lenny and Daniel C. Daniel J and Daniel C tried it with me, but I said no. Brenda got off with Peter. I fancy Peter. February 27th. Brilliant day! At youth club, Simon told me that Peter said my crack was big and hairy. Simon asked him if it smelled. And Peter said, it smelled lovely. Went to the chippy. Peter was talking to me. He doesn't like Susan. Good. I love Peter so much. P.S. He tried to finger me at Susan's party, but couldn't find the hole. It's probably because of all the hair. Just guessing. February 28th. I'm known as BHP now. Big Hairy Puss.
At the time of the BHP incident, I was proper proud. Back when I was 14, not everyone had hit puberty at that point, but I had, and I had a nice bush, and I was proud of it because it meant that I was properly becoming a woman, unlike some of the girls who just had peaches. We were known for being pretty and nice and going to the different clubs and sometimes getting off of the boys. I was the leader of my group. I think that the more popular we became, it got to my head a little bit, but I've always been that person, really, but that just put the cherry on the cake.
March 7th, did the play Bugsy Malone. It was a total success. Most of it was because of me. I was in a total high, and no one will ever understand that. I was proud, and so was Mum. Had some Martina's birthday cake. Stupid bitch, she didn't even know. March 25th. At the party, me and Susan told Chelsea, Mel, Anne what we thought about them, and they all cried. I couldn't believe it. I was coming popular, but I didn't have everything I wanted. I didn't have a boyfriend. I decided to go big and date Neil McIntosh. Here are some love poems I wrote about our romantic relationship. Well, this is more of a song than a poem, so excuse the voice. Nearly, nearly, you're such a sexy git. I'll give you head and you can suck my tit. We'll fuck on the top of your bunk bed and then I'll give you some more head. And when it's the end, you're gonna have my friend and I'll have your brother instead. And full disclosure, I did have his brother.
Me dating Neil was definitely a big deal. My popularity grew just because the whole town knew who I was. But I couldn't go anywhere without people not knowing who I was because I was known as his girlfriend.
We were now popular throughout the town and I was out of control. I felt that to get the ultimate respect for my peers, I had to let them know who was boss. I decided to write my friends letters, letting them know what I thought of them. Tina, you are such a selfish, stupid bitch. I don't even see the point in you being in the posse. Everybody has the posse spirit except for little Miss Selfish Tina. You expect everyone to do you favours, but you give shit into this posse. You best start pulling your weight, you stupid, spoiled brat.
I thought I was cementing myself in the group when I was writing those letters because I was putting down, like, the rules. So we could all, like, adhere to them. But who wants to be dictated to? I should have shut my mouth and I shouldn't have said anything, but that was awful. Eventually, that took a toll, and after, let's see, probably 18 months, 2 years, we just split up the group. Our posse split up. The advice I would give to middle schoolers, high schoolers who are trying to be popular, just be yourself. I mean, I was being myself. I was an awful person.
Angela Weeks didn't have a problem speaking her mind, especially when it came to gossiping.
It's our burn book. So we cut out girls' pictures from the yearbook, and then we wrote comments.
Trang Pak is a grotsky little biatch.
Still true.
Don Schweitzer is a fat virgin.
Still half true.
Amber D'Alessio, she made out with a hot dog.
And what happens when you're part of a clique that not only doesn't have a burn book, but prizes the group over the individual?
Hi, I'm Megan.
Hey. Hi, I'm Becky.
Hi, I'm Christina.
AKA 3/5 of what their peers affectionately referred to as the Fab Five. They recently had a mini reunion where it was clear how much affection they have for each other. But as the audacity of naming yourself the Fab Five might suggest, they weren't always so sweet.
We met in elementary school, and then by middle school, there was a group of five of us who were inseparable. I'd like to tell people we were in like a cult because we only hung out with each other.
The friends spent every waking moment together, and most of it in Christian youth group, which means they were kind of like a clique for God, which was mostly great, unless problems arose. Then, according to Christina, they had no idea how to deal with disagreements in a more pious way.
We were too nice and we didn't want to actually bring up issues that we had with other people.
Things got bad. They started talking behind each other's backs, So they decided to come up with a way to share their issues with each other, but in the nicest way possible.
We started the notebook at my house, I think in seventh grade.
It was like write down kind of grievances that you have for each person. Mm-hmm. We write them on a piece of paper, throw the papers in a bowl, and then sit around in a circle and take turns reading these.
And they were always anonymous. Things.
Yeah, they were supposed to be.
And we would mix the notes up, the little scraps of paper up in the bowl, and then we would randomly choose the notes out and we would read them out loud.
But was it really the nicest way to share their true feelings with each other? We decided to find out. I asked each of them to share their saved up pieces of paper from back in the day. And together we dumped all of them into a bowl and recreated the note bowl. This time with less tears.
Becky, you go first.
Okay.
Pick one for us.
Okay. I'm gonna.
And one by one, they pulled out a note and read it aloud. This one was meant for Christina.
Christina, sometimes you cuss a lot and act like a total non-Christian.
Then a note to Megan.
Megan, I really heart you, but when you are tired, you yell at me. I feel really sad. But that's totally understandable. Well, and the funny thing is a lot of the notes we like kind of tried to justify everything we said or like take it back. I'd be like, sometimes you're mean to me. Just kidding. And but yeah. Like, obviously we're not kidding because yeah. Why did you write it down?
Yeah.
You give like four compliments and then say one like mean thing.
And that's the whole point of the note was you just wanted to say that mean thing. But
we
couldn't say it. We still couldn't. Yeah.
And this one's from Becky.
I wrote this to Kristen and Megan. Okay, I don't know how Chris and I got on this convo, but we started discussing about how some people are spoiled. And we realized that you guys are really lucky and you get lots of stuff, but you aren't spoiled at all. Like, I love it. I would never consider you guys spoiled.
So it turns out sharing your true feelings with each other without trying to be mean is actually even meaner. Especially if you get the same passive-aggressive note from all four of your so-called friends.
I always got like four about how I dressed. Mm-hmm. And the girls were like, oh, you dress so cute. I love your style. But sometimes it's a little showy and unchristian.
Mine was about my church that I was a part of. Megan, sometimes you get personal and think that we are making fun of your church when we are just saying something about it.
It basically was like, Megan, we think your church is a cult. And it was kind of like our church is better than yours.
But that was very upsetting to me. And I ended up like crying about my parents' church, basically.
As the friends reminisced over the note bowl, it led Becky to realize something new about her role in the group.
That is so fetch.
Gretchen, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
It was kind of like poor Becky was the clique's Gretchen Wieners. You know, the Mean Girls character who served as the popular girl's lapdog?
Okay, this one is weird. I'm sick and tired of being your slave. I'm not a doormat. I'm not a doormat! JK, smiley face! Beck.
We would make you do a lot of stuff for us.
Yeah!
We would make her get us, like, water and popcorn. Like.
And they didn't just make Becky get snacks. They asked her to do things. Mean things. Like, I don't know, dumping her middle school boyfriend in the middle of recess.
They made me dump him on the basketball court. We walked up arm in arm and basically said, Steven, you're playing basketball at lunch, which means you care more about basketball than me. So then we broke up. But then like a week later, I was like, I miss him so much. And I wrote him a letter talking about how much I missed him. But I put it in the wrong locker. It never got to him.
And that's then, what happened.
That's why happened. Didn't that's end up why together. I'm not married to Stephen Langford right now.
Why are you so mean to Becky? Becky, you're
right?
Making her break up with guys. You were all the mean girls to Becky. There hasn't been a note bowl in over a decade. So I thought I'd give the Fab Five, well, the three that were with me, the chance to do it one last time. But for some odd reason, no one was exactly excited by the idea.
I want to find a piece of paper, and I want you guys to write one note today.
What do we write?
Can it be nice?
I know.
You don't want to do it? Are the stakes too high because you're adults now?
Yeah.
And we've been friends for a long time.
Eventually, the note bowl was empty. But a big question remained. Why do mean girls exist? And are they really as terrifying as they seem? And for those awful truths,
We knew just the person to ask.
My name is Melissa Shore, and I went to elementary, middle, and high school with Danny.
That's the Melissa, Daniel Franzese's childhood nemesis, who tortured him ever since that fateful day she saw him wearing that eyeball shirt.
I think girls are especially mean because girls tend to not say anything right away, then let it build up and then explode, where boys will just beat the crap out of each other and then it's over. But girls tend to, it's like they're trying to see who could be almost the meanest so no one's mean to them. It's like self-defense. Like, you don't want to be the weakest link. I have no idea why I was so mean, but I kind of like zoned in on him as someone I could make fun of, but he gave me good material. Danny wore these huge glasses. They were like windshield wipers on his face. Oh, I called him Daniel Fat Franzese. Horrible.
You'll be happy to know that in ninth grade, Danny and Melissa actually got over their adversarial past. And it was a true mean girl moment that brought them together.
Well, we went to school in the 90s in Florida where it's like really, really hot. And it was also a time where hypercolor shirts were in style.
I don't know if you know what a hypercolor shirt is, but it's like a heat activated color changing fabric.
Hypercolor clothing changes color with heat.
So basically, if you have a yellow shirt on and then you get hot, if the shirt gets hot, then it turns green. Or if you have a pink shirt on and it gets hot, it turns purple. So in ninth grade, we're sitting in the commons area of our high school, and this girl walks in a pink hypercolor shirt that is turning purple only in her armpits and underneath her breasts. And I was dying because it was hysterical to me. And I was like, oh my God, this is so funny. And I started looking around to my right and left to see who would be around that could notice this with me. And I made eye contact with Melissa.
Danny and I just turned to each other because we saw it at the same time and just started laughing. And I guess we made fun of her together and then became friends.
And she was like, you know what? You're all right. And I'm like, you're okay too. And she's like, why don't you come to this party? And I'm like, why don't you come to the drama club? And then I ended up being drama club president and she was vice president and we got along for the rest of our lives. I think that the fact that the initial basis of our friendship was at somebody else's unfortunate expense is more of a testament to what a bitch Melissa actually was and not me. I was willing to make friends a long time ago.
And today they're still friends who find themselves bonding over being mean. But now they're the butt of the joke.
We have this whole thing about the city of Pompeii, how when Vesuvius erupted, it like made everybody freeze in exactly what they're doing. So when we do like embarrassing things like eat ice cream in the middle of the night, it's our Pompeii moment. Where if we got frozen, people would be like very judgmental.
We'd be those people eating on the couch, like mouth open and all.
Despite their enduring friendship, we couldn't help but wonder if there's any lingering resentment from Melissa's mean girl days.
So even though we've moved forward and we've become friends and family and we're so ingrained into each other's life, I think I do owe you an apology because you know that I love you so much. And if I knew then what I knew now, that would never, ever be the case.
That's really sweet and I appreciate
Except that shirt still sucks. And I would still make fun of you.
I have to say, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I do not accept your apology because I love you so because I love you so much and I wouldn't change how things turned out.
That's true. We wouldn't have this good story.
It's literally the origin story of one of the best friendships ever. That's the funny part of this whole thing.
As always, all the childhood writings heard in today's episode were shared with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. And this concludes today's episode, where we learned there's no going back to the warm hug that was seventh grade, no matter how much we want to.
I just wish we could all get along like we used to in middle school. I wish that I could bake a cake made out of rainbows and smiles and we'd all eat and be happy.
She doesn't even go here!
Special thanks to Daniel Franzese and his elementary school tormentor, Melissa Shore, as well as Angela Weeks, Caitlin Tortorisi, and the Notebowl girls, Megan, Becky, and Christina. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of the series. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia, and if your company would like to support our podcast, we'd love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Pooja Bhatt, Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. And Jensen Smith's story produced this for the stage. Big thanks to Lance Roberts Studios and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survive hot days in our hypercolor shirts.